You are now listening to The Social Scene with your host, GZ. Get seen today and contact us at www.jzsocialenterprises.com. Today, the show is brought to you by polishedandbubbly.blogspot.com. Welcome back to The Social Scene with JZ at JZ Social Enterprises. Today, I'm really excited to have such an inspiring guest on the line, bounty hunter Rob Dick from California. Hi, Rob. How are you today?
Good. How's it going?
Good. I'm so excited to have you. I find your job so fascinating. So for those who aren't familiar with what a bounty hunter is, can you tell us?
Basically, we get hired predominantly by bail bond companies to enforce the basically a bail contract where a person bails out of jail so that they can continue going to their criminal case from out on the street. And while they're out on bail, they have certain restrictions that they have to stay within the state, have all their court appearances, do what they're supposed to do as far as finishing up their criminal case. And when they don't, that's usually when the bounty hunter gets brought in.
So you go get them and make sure that they attend everything if they're not.
Right. A bail agent and someone that's co-signed for that person has basically put up money to keep that person out of court when a person doesn't appear in court. Now, it's a little different state to state as far as terminology, as far as what's called a forfeiture when somebody misses court. In California, it's called a forfeiture. Other states, sometimes it's called a intent to forfeit. I mean, there's just different terminologies depending upon the state. But basically, you have an amount of time to resolve that by getting the person back into the court, back into custody, or resolving it. Maybe if they went out of country and the district attorney didn't want to extradite and you can prove where they were. I mean, it gets a little complicated, but we have to do something in a time frame. Otherwise, the bondsman and the cosigner, which is usually a friend, family member, loved one that's put up that money, will lose that money. So that's where we come into play.
Oh, fascinating. I didn't know that part of it, so it was interesting. So tell us how you fell into this career.
Well, I kind of fell into it. I kind of fell into it. A roommate of mine got a DUI, and myself and his dad ended up bailing him out. I really didn't know anything about the bail system or even how it worked. At the time, I was working as a deputy sheriff here in Sacramento County. So we bailed him out. The company that we used to bail him out was connected to a guy by the name of Leonard Padilla. Leonard Padilla was kind of a well-known person in the community as far as bounty hunting, and had been on TV, did a couple bounty hunting related things, and started talking with him and kind of went that route and decided to actually leave law enforcement and get into bounty hunting because it was just a better deal. I mean, travel, pay, I mean, just everything. I've had a great time these last, it's been over 20 years now.
Wow, that was going to be my next question. Like, how long have you been doing it? So over 20 years.
That all started in 91.
Fabulous. So cool. I mean, I find it so fascinating. You must work with all walks of life, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, and on both sides, not only the person who's bailed out, who's charged with a crime, but also on the criminal justice side, all types of cops and law enforcement agencies. And you know, sometimes I'm not quite sure which one's easier to deal with.
Right. That's so true, though. That's so funny you say that. So let's talk about your experience with working with Casey Anthony. I think it's so amazing that you guys bailed her out and spent 24 hours a day with her throughout her whole trial. So tell me about that experience.
Yeah, that was, you know, Leonard always kind of had a way of, you know, people nicknamed him the media whore because he just loved to be in front of the camera. And he would find a way to get in the news, do something. And not that it was bad. I mean, it was usually in...
Now, Leonard was your partner, right? Just so people know, Leonard was your partner.
Right. Leonard okay. Padilla, like I said, him and I started working with him in 91. He kind of convinced me to go the bounty hunting route. And like I said, him and I worked for years. He's actually out of everything now, kind of retired, if you will, doesn't do anything.
So you were talking about your experience. Tell us about it. So how did it all happen? Can you go into some detail?
Yeah. He decided, hey, let's bail her. You know, at the time she'd been in custody for 30 days and he, decided that, hey, if we bail her out, she kept saying in the media that if she was out of custody, she'd be able to give details or some information on where to find her child. So he figured, like I say, for both things, one is a media thing and as well as a way to have an interesting story to kind of involve ourselves by him putting up a bond and bailing her out. And as a condition of that bond, having me stay with her. You know, and that can happen. I mean, there's a couple of reasons on that. Number one, you have the issue of since it was $500,000 bond, we obviously don't want her to flee or anything to happen to her.
Right.
You know, we're on the hook with it. And then the real reason probably was to be kind of inserted close to the family and maybe try to help solve that.
Interesting. So what is she like? I mean, you got to know her really well, not just on like a normal human being level, but you spent a lot of time with her. So what was she like?
Scary.
Scary.
I mean, you know, she's one of the team members nicknamed her the cruise director because she's always just happy-go-lucky, no matter what's going on. The night we got her out of custody, I knew immediately we had a problem. And what I mean by that is that you have to understand she's been in custody for 30 days at that point. Her child was probably missing for another 30 days before that, before they actually caught up to it, put her in custody. So in anybody's who's normal's mind, when they get out, last 30 days, no contact. I mean, don't you think the first words would be, you know, okay, mom, dad, where are we at? You know, any leads come in? Because she's been in custody. She hasn't had any contact other than a couple of visits. So that would be the natural response.
Right.
Unfortunately, that wasn't the response. The response was, wow, I'm so glad to be out of here. Man, I need a shower. Hey, what's for dinner? Because jail's food.
Oh, my God.
I mean, there was no discussion of her missing child. So from the very beginning that night, we knew there was a problem. You know, there's some issue here. You know, fast forward now that we know everything, well, it's obvious. You know, she knew exactly where her child was the whole time.
Exactly. That's so crazy. So like what, you know, being with somebody for 24 hours a day, like what do you do with them? Like, especially because, you know, they're on surveillance. So like, what do they do? What do you guys are required to do? Like, how does that work?
Well, and you know, there was things that she had to do as far as, you know, going to see her attorney. And during that time, unfortunately, because of the media presence during that case, I mean, there was kind of a lot of nuts on both sides, you know.
Right.
Obviously, there was a lot of people that wanted to do her harm. You know, we faced with a lot of that. It was almost like people were showing up in the yard, chanting and yelling, you know, yelling at the house.
Oh, God.
And basically, you know, life on the inside is just normal. I mean, you know, watching TV, eating a meal. And then the only time we left the house, because she was also on home monitoring, which we had certain times we could leave, and it was either go to court, go to the attorney, or go to home. So those were the only three times that she actually left the physical residence of her parents. And then it was just kind of like a protection detail, you know, transporting back and forth with all the nuts, trying to get a picture, trying to, you know.
Right. Did you guys ever get any time off, or did you switch off?
No, during that time, it was pretty much all the time. And a lot of people didn't realize that we also had I had a female with me. And she wasn't in much of it. But the reason for that was that she was actually for my... I didn't trust Casey. You know, I didn't want to be alone with her.
Can you repeat that, Rob? You went out for... Can you repeat that? You went out for a second. So just repeat the part about the female. It's okay. Just repeat it for us. We couldn't hear you.
I said that... you know, it's kind of interesting that a lot of people didn't realize that I actually had a female with us the whole time because I didn't trust her. You know, I didn't want to be in a situation where I was left alone with her. And because I'm a male, she's a female. Now she says something or something's made up, whatever.
Right.
So to protect myself, I also had a female. So when it came time to sleep, the female slept in her room with her. And then I'd go out and... We had a trailer, actually, in front of the yard.
Wow, I give the female credit for sleeping with her.
Yeah, she would stay in the same room with her. And originally, it was kind of like, you know, when this first starts, you know, you have to always consider everything because, you know, not knowing the family, not knowing her, you know, there was a potential for suicide originally with any case like this.
Right.
So originally, you know, yeah, she went to the bathroom, the female went into the bathroom with her, you know, she took a shower, all that. But 5 minutes around Casey, and she's never going to kill herself. I mean, that's...
So that's what you came to the conclusion within 5 minutes of getting to know her, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's almost sickening that, you know, the daily back and forth, like when we're going to leave the house to go to Baez's office, who is her attorney, you know, the conversations would be more like she would say, okay, so how much media is out there? How many, you know, do I look good? It's like, really?
Oh my God.
More like, you know, have you heard anything about my daughter? You know, what's going on? I'm facing a case. I mean, it's just, I say, you know, she was nicknamed the cruise director because it was just, everything was fun and games. She's always happy. I guess I would describe her for guys. She'd be the greatest girl you'd meet out in a bar or something, but I wouldn't close my eyes.
Right. Oh my God. Crazy. Crazy. Oh my God. So your life after that was over, you must have had like a real breath of fresh air.
Yeah. That was probably the weirdest, I guess, for lack of better terms, experience I've ever had. Just, you know, I never really understood why there was so much media attention to it. I mean, it was 24/7. I mean, it was, you know, we had to deal with, like, Nancy Grace would do live shots almost every night in front of the house. So that would be set up across the street. So that would bring, you know, 500 people just to see if they could walk in front of the camera. You'd have another 500 people that wanted to lynch Casey. So they're chanting outside the house. It's just chaos. It was just chaos. And I've never experienced anything like that. So I've actually, when she was taken back into custody the night, it's kind of a funny thing. If anybody's into movies and say Spaceballs, where that one scene where they say, when's that happen? It's happening right now. When she was taken back into custody, it was getting a little hairy because it was two of us that were in the front yard, and there was probably a good 1,000 people out there that really wanted to hang her. Nancy Grace is doing a live feed, so Casey's actually sitting on the couch with her parents and our other female and a couple of girls from Texas EquiSearch. And they're watching Nancy Grace live as the cops came into the yard and walked into the house and hooked her that final time to take her back.
What? Crazy.
They're watching TV like, wow, what? Wait, isn't that our yard? Isn't this live? Oh, yeah. Oh, shoot.
Oh, my God. That's crazy. So how did you end up with the case? Like, how did that all happen?
Well, it's because, you know, she was in custody. Nobody could bail her. It was a $500,000 bond, so... Like I say, Leonard decided to, he would bail her on the half mil, which would then put us close for protecting the bond.
Oh, makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. So
yeah, a lot of people don't.
No, go ahead.
I was just saying, a lot of people don't realize that when someone bails out of custody, technically they're not out of custody. They're actually in the custody of the person that bailed them out.
That makes sense because they're paying the money to get you.
Right, and they're on the hook for it. So Basically they are in their custody, and that's what kind of gives us a little bit more leeway as far as, people always say, well, how can you go into somebody's house without a warrant, things like that? Well, it's because they're not out of custody. They're in our custody. They don't sleep on our couch at night, but they're still kind of ours. The courts have likened it to being on a string, and that the bail agent or recovery person can pull that string at any time when they fear their liability.
Wow. That's fascinating. So now that you had a breath of fresh air between now what you're doing now, tell us what you did, like, as soon as the trial was over.
As soon as the trial was over, I was kind of just in a weird place because nobody imagined her getting off.
Right, exactly, right.
And I don't think I'll ever forget that day because of our involvement with it. On the day of the verdict and everything during the trial, I was actually in New York. They had flown us to New York. We were doing a bunch of talk shows and kind of taking turns on the talk show circuit about it while the trial was going on. And then I just remember sitting in that hotel room in New York, right by Central Park, and actually kind of a nice little New York vacation, you know, during the trial, just waiting for that verdict that we all know is going to come back, and then just complete shock. And just, I can't even believe it, you know. I mean, I understand it today, how it happened, I think, but it's just kind of hard to swallow.
Right, right, absolutely.
I mean, there's no question in my mind who did it, you know.
Right.
And there was only one person involved, and yeah, she got away with it, you know, basically.
Crazy. So crazy. So outside of this extreme life experience, tell us about, you know, what you're doing right now. So you teach bounty hunting classes, which is awesome. And you do that in Sacramento, right?
Yeah, I actually have two training facilities, one in Sacramento and then one in LA.
That's awesome. So what does the class consist of? Like, how does it work?
Well, the California legal requirement, and it's kind of unfortunate, but there is no, like, federal bounty hunting class out there. Laws are different in each state. The rules are kind of the same, and the original rules started back in 1873 from a federal case decision, Taylor versus Tanner, which had really broad language that would allow us to break and enter a person's home, arrest them on the Sabbath, cross state lines. That was the language that was used to give us our powers as far as retrieving these people that basically escape custody is how they look at it. You know, you're out on bail, you don't go to court, and they issue a warrant. It's not a new offense. Yes, the warrant's new, but it's kind of like an escape because you're basically escaping the custody of the bail agent and the person that bailed you out.
Right.
So it's a lot of power as far as, you know, where a guy might be in his house with a warrant and a police officer can't actually just force his way in there and get them without getting an additional warrant to do the entry and all that, or we could just go in even by force if necessary.
Really?
So, yeah, so it's kind of a different kind of a job because back prior to about 1997, there wasn't really a lot of rules and regulations other than that case decision. It was kind of basically, here's a gun, go kick that door. Good luck.
Right,
you know?
Right.
In 1997, there was an incident in Arizona that had nothing to do with bounty hunting. Let me say that straight from the gate. There was nothing to do with bounty hunting. It was where five guys did a home invasion upon a couple that was selling drugs. The five guys were armed, they wore masks, and it was a home invasion to rip them off, basically. Well, because it was Arizona and everybody has a firearm, the couple and the five guys got in a big shootout in the house. The couple was killed, and one of the five guys was shot.
Right.
Law enforcement showed up, and the excuse the guys used was, oh, we're bounty hunting. We're looking for this guy. So law enforcement was kind of put back with, oh, well, we don't know what bounty hunting these guys do, and, well, okay, have a good day. Well, wait a minute, we got to deal with these dead bodies, you know.
Right.
Long story short, they found out exactly what it was. The guys got arrested and everything else. However, unfortunately, the headlines that made national news were bounty hunters enter the wrong residence and kill a couple.
Which is not what happened at all.
Not at all.
Right.
And obviously that was retracted weeks later, you know, 10 pages back in a little tiny article that nobody read.
But right.
The damage was done right at that point. Because on a national level, there were legislatures that were looking at bounty hunting going, wait a minute, bounty hunting? Does that even exist? Isn't that back in the cowboy days? They don't really exist, do they? And when they started looking into it, they started saying, so wait a minute. As the law stated at that day, anybody of suitable age could do it. No training required. And that created kind of a knee-jerk reaction, which, you know, different states have different rules. Some states are licensed states, you know, and have a curriculum, have a background check, have an actual license issued. Some states still aren't. And I kind of got off track on this, but where I was going with all that was to get to what you asked about my class. I teach what's required in California.
Makes sense. Well, because you're based there. Right.
Right. Yeah, California has a 20-hour training requirement for bail agent or bail recovery. It doesn't matter. The only difference, bail agent's usually the one that's bailing them out. Recovery guy is usually the one that's going to get them. That's the bounty hunter, bail recovery, whatever you want to call them. There's not really a perfect term for it. And in California, there is not a license, but is a training required state. So you have to take the 20-hour course. There's actually, for the recovery side, two classes that you have to take. One is a 20-hour that I teach, and one is a 40-hour, what's called a PC 832 Powers to Arrest course. That's done at a local community college, and unfortunately, it has nothing to do with bail recovery. And basically, so for California, that's what makes you legal to do.
Is there an age requirement or no?
There is now, 18.
Okay. Interesting. So there were bounty hunters that were like teenagers at some point.
Potentially there could be. I mean, you know, I have, you know, Leonard, for example, you know, he's got his kid that's maybe 16 back then, and he's got him playing Frisbee with his friends in front of the fugitive's house, and, you know, and hey, I see him, Dad, go get him, you know.
That's so funny.
But nowadays, yeah, it's more regulated with when we meet law enforcement today, at least in California, you have to show your two training certificates to show you meet the qualifications.
That's good. So there's some guidelines, so not a random person is just claiming they're a bounty hunter, right?
Right. There is a little bit. It's not much. I mean, California, I have to say, isn't perfect, so it's not much, but right. It is what it is.
But it's something.
I'm licensed in Nevada just because it's next door.
Right.
And that's actually a really strict licensing situation. I mean, no felons. It's either a full police academy or their 2-week bounty hunting academy. You got to pass a drug test, pass a psychological test. I mean, it's like being a cop.
Wow. So every state's different. That's what you were saying. Yeah. That's so interesting.
Yeah. And what I tell people in the class is that, you know, this is California class. I'm giving you all the California stuff. 99% of your skips are going to be California. You know, if you get one that takes off and goes cross country because laws change so much, that's the time to sit down and figure out what you got to do. I mean,
right.
I can tell you that in my career, I've been in every state.
Right.
But could I tell you the law of New Hampshire right now? Absolutely not. You know, I mean, if I get a guy that takes off and I find out he's in New Hampshire, well, then I'll sit down, I'll look up the law, I'll figure out whether it's a licensed state, figure out if I have to contract with somebody there. I'm still probably going there, but I got to figure out what I can and can't do at that point in time.
Right.
Because there is nothing on the federal level currently that you can get to just get you for all 50 states.
Makes sense.
Yep.
Very cool. So when you're not working, what do you like to do in your free time?
What's that?
Free time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'll get to my hobby in a second, which probably is just as much to talk about, but... I kind of work all the time. I guess I'm probably a workaholic in some sorts, but, you know, I run the school, so 2 weekends a month, first weekend I'm up in Northern California, third weekend I'm in Southern California. In between that, I run a general agency, which general agency gets people into the bail business. So, obviously, someone coming through the class who just wants to start their own bail bond company, I help them get started, get them hooked up with the insurance, get them bonds, and then I end up managing their liability and kind of holding their hand, making sure they don't get in trouble, and making sure they do everything they should have learned in class. So with that being said, I monitor about 45 companies right now.
Wow, you're a busy guy.
Yeah, as far as, you know, if they miss. And then it's kind of a good thing, though, because we all work together, too. So, you know, if one guy's got a guy that's on the run, you know, I can point him to one of our other people that are kind of under our umbrella that will help him out. And hopefully I don't have to get involved, you know.
Right.
A lot of that is hopefully what I'm teaching for other people to go do.
Mm-hmm.
Then I guess my hobby, like I say, I hope we don't start a whole long new podcast on this, but I've been involved in a serial killer case since 1999.
Wow.
That's probably, I would have to say probably it's going to be my life's work probably.
Really? You think so? That long? Well, it's already been almost 10 years. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, I got involved in 99. It's almost 20 years.
Yeah, good point. Oh my God, yeah.
And, you know, it's just, it's one of these things, you know, in a nutshell, because like I said, this could go on forever. I got totally obsessed with it. It started out with a missing girl locally. That's how I got involved. You know, she was just missing back in 98. And so when they started doing searches in 99, I started volunteering out there. We're trying to find her, trying to find what happened to her. Basically, she just vanished. She was out in the bars one night, and next thing you know, she was gone. And back then, you know, it wasn't like today where you see it all the time now on all the talk shows and people missing, you know. But back then, it was kind of a weird thing, and kind of even weirder for me. I just couldn't figure out how that could happen because, you know, in the bounty hunting world, that's what we do. We find people that don't want to be found, and no matter where they're at and what they're doing, we're going to find them.
Right.
So it's kind of like a puzzle.
Right, because you still haven't figured it out yet. That is fascinating.
Yeah, and it was really bugging me. And the deeper I got into it, I became friends with the family. And like I say, I spent any weekend I had up in the hills looking in mine shafts, wells, anywhere we could try to figure out what happened to John, her dad's daughter. You know, John, his other daughter, Kim. I mean, we were just going everywhere every free moment back in the 99, 2000. So they had a suspect. Eventually somebody got arrested. Actually, March 17, 1999, they arrested two guys for her murder without a body. And that just made it worse because when they interviewed the first one, he started talking about 6 to 7 homicides back in 85. And before we knew it, they had a case involving 7 homicides against 2 individuals. The problem I had, which made me even more intrigued, is that how would it be where 2 friends, 18 years of age, killed 6 people back in 85, and then what, went on vacation to Cindy in 98. I got to thinking that that's just not possible. Number one, it's kind of weird that 2 friends become serial killers. And number two, the only thing that stops a serial killer is death and incarceration. So what happened between 85 and 98? And then that's where the obsession came in. Next thing you know, I'm putting together probably over 100 cases, going back and forth. It's kind of an involved story, but I'm trying to make it as short as possible.
No, it's so fascinating. I think you're pretty summarizing it as well as you can, so it's okay.
Okay. Currently today, where we're at, is I actually visit one of the serial killers on death row. Try to get there once a month. In the course of the investigation that I have done, we've recovered 6 more bodies, including Cindy, the one that started it all.
Wow.
I actually took her father to where she was recovered, and we got her recovered. And I think that's the now where I'm kind of tied to this for life is that there's a potential of probably easily another 90 bodies to recover.
Right.
I'm in contact with most of the family members. and it's unfortunate, but nobody else is looking.
Yeah. So it's like, and you it's almost get, you get closure out of it though, for each time you get more things, more answers, right?
Right. And that's the thing, but it's not for me, it's for the families, you know, right. It's kind of a, it's a weird explanation on feelings, because I can't really feel their pain. You know, I don't have anybody missing in my family, but I do know being around them, it's just so tremendous, you know. I mean, some of the family members are basically, they just don't do anything. You know, they're just locked into this continual wondering of what happened to their son, daughter, whoever.
Right.
And then when the actual closure's there, it's just a revelation of feelings, and it's just a weird thing. I mean, it's a good thing. It's just, it's an emotional roller coaster, that's for sure.
Yeah, it makes sense. Wow, you have such an interesting life, Rob. I'm so happy you shared it with us today. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, no problem.
Of course. So tell everybody how they can, you know, get in touch with you, whether it's for a class, your website, and your social media links.
Okay. Yeah, I have Renegade Investigations is my investigations site. That's renegadeinvestigations.com. I have Rob Dick PI on Facebook. That's all the serial killer stuff. And then on the other side, on the training, it's Bail Education Association is the name. I shortened it up for BEAclass.com. And any one of those sites kind of all link together.
Perfect. And do you want anyone to follow you on, like, your socials? Like, I know you have Instagram and Twitter. You want to tell people what those are?
Oh, boy. It's easier to go to the Facebook.
Okay, that's fine. So just tell them the Facebook. Tell them the Facebook.
Yeah. Bail Education. It's just ready to put Bail Education after Facebook. Or if you search Rob Dick, like I said, it's all intertwined. I don't know where it actually starts. I just know it all connects to each other.
All right, cool. That's totally fine. You summarized it great. So everybody just go to any of the websites or go to Rob's Facebook page, and you guys will get anything that you need to get in touch with him. Good answer, right?
Yeah.
Perfect. So thank you again so much for coming on today. It was such a pleasure to have you. And listeners, thank you so much for tuning in to The Social Scene with Jay-Z at Jay-Z Social Enterprises. And stay tuned until next time. Today, the show is brought to you by Dutch Crown Records and ConnectPay.com. Don't forget, The Social Scene is where you can get seen today by thousands between blogger placements, special events, radio features, magazine features, and more. Contact us today at jzsocialenterprises@gmail.com.